Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is Christian Krumlish, product consultant and the author of Product Management for UX People, and that is the topic for our conversation today. This episode is brought to you by InVision. The future of work is not about getting things done in one specific way. The future of work is collaborative, where everyone's strengths can fuel the entire team. That's where InVision comes in. InVision brings teams and tools together in one real-time collaborative workspace. From kickoffs to handoffs, InVision makes work more inclusive, creative, and impactful. Try it for free at InVisionApp.com. Hi, Christian.
Hi, Jane. Nice to be here.
We're excited to learn from you. But before we start, could you give us some background, who you are and what your story is? Because it is a pretty big story.
Yeah, I've learned to try to maybe not tell my whole story, but just some highlights. And then people can always ask me more if there's things that intrigue them. So I've been working on internet things for about as long as there's been a web, at least a popular web. I started in the 90s. And over the years, I had many UX roles, even before UX was maybe the most common term for these titles. So I was a content manager, content strategist, information architect, interaction designer, UX designer, design manager, director of UX. But along the way, I also started to get interested in and started to learn more about product management, and also started to see more product management sort of style of work take over of making software on the internet, that suddenly product managers seemed to be in charge of things and everything was being framed as a product. I had mixed feelings about that, but I found it interesting because it touched on things that went beyond design and went beyond even UX into other areas. So over time, I found mentors and opportunities to learn to be a product manager and transitioned to a director of product and a head of product and VP of product, roles like that. So for about 4 years, I was head of product for a mental health startup called Seven Cups. And more recently, I've been consulting, advising companies, often starting their product management practices or hiring their first product person. And more specifically, helping the state of California with the product management of its COVID response website.
So you have a book coming out, and by the time this recording is live, it should be already available and you should be popping champagne and celebrating.
That's right.
What is the title and how did you decide to write this book?
Well, the title's a mouthful. The main title is Product Management for UX People. And the subtitle is From Designing to Thriving in a Product World. And I think the question was, why did I decide to write it? It was mainly because, as I mentioned, I had pursued a career path that had taken me from having UX titles to having product titles. And yet all along, I continue to think of myself in many ways as a UX person, and I still bring a UX sensibility to my work. UX is foundational to the way that I do product management. However, even though UX and product management overlap, and some people even will argue they're the same thing, they do tend to overlap in some areas and then diverge in other areas. And to become a very good product manager, I had to learn things I had never had to learn as a UX person. And I, fortunately, as I said, I had mentors, coaches, bosses, people who helped me fill in those gaps and gain those additional proficiencies. I also found over the years that other people on UX career tracks were facing some similar questions. Do I need to become a manager or can I keep being an individual contributor? Is one that I think we've all heard discussed before. And along those lines was now the question of, should I become a product manager? That seems interesting. Or that's what my boss is. Do I have to be that to become the boss? You know, that was a sort of a conversation I found myself in a lot, which led me eventually to creating a community called Design in Product that was sort of talking about both how UX and product management relate, but also how do you make sure that the UX voice in product management is strong and has its, at least its proper role. And that community gathered a lot of people who were either in career transitions or just wrestling with that boundary and trying to understand how to make the most of it. And so the book, in a sense, grew organically out of that community, out of those discussions, out of some earlier presentations and workshops I had started teaching as a way of helping other people understand, even though coming from a UX background, what is product management? How does it overlap? How does it potentially conflict? Is it something that you might want to learn to do yourself? And even if not, how can you work well on a product team with product managers in a company that says that what you're making is a product?
I'm really excited that we'll get to talk about this today and demystify this position, because it sounds rather simple, but it's a management position without too much power, and it can be pretty depressing at times. And let's start with the definition. What would you say product manager is, and what do they do?
Right. Well, a product manager is somebody responsible for creating value and for focusing and prioritizing the work so that what is created is a product that can survive and thrive in the marketplace, meaning that it creates enough value for people that they will hire it to do the job or start to use it, and that they'll continue to use it, and that there will be some sort of financial revenue sustaining kind of flow based on that quality. The idea that it's a product, I think, is hard for some people because the term is sort of often conceived of as a physical object, a can of soup on the shelf or a box of laundry detergent are all kind of traditional 20th century products with packaging and a price tag and a factory-oriented distribution model and things like that. A digital product is clearly something very different from that, and it's a bit of a paradox because it's often usually something like a service too, and it doesn't have the same boundaries that a physical product had. Nonetheless, people have found that framing things as a product is helpful. It provides a focusing lens where you say, what if this piece of software we were making could be sold and commodified, or could sort of be packaged up so that people, individuals, could opt to use it, or maybe enterprises could adopt it and sort of purchase it on a reliable basis. So it's essentially a way of trying to take what has been learned from the physical world of marketing objects as products and map it onto the digital world. And it's just been a very powerful frame, I think partly because it came from the business world. So the money people and the bosses were more attuned to that way of thinking than the language of design or even the language of technology.
What does a typical manager do on a day-to-day basis?
Well, and the product manager, as you noted, although they have the title manager, it's a little misleading because they may not actually have any direct reports. It's typical for a product manager to not be a manager in that sense of being a people manager. So what are they? Well, and then it's also very common for a product manager to be mistaken by a lot of people for a project manager. The titles are very similar sounding. The distinctions are not clearly defined in a lot of organizations, or sometimes are used in a sloppy way. And for some people, it's a distinction that doesn't matter to them very much. I mean, sometimes engineers call me a project manager and then they apologize, but they just sort of mean that person who helps them figure out what they should be working on. And, you know, maybe it doesn't matter if they get the terminology correct from my point of view. Typically, a product manager spends their day doing a lot of communicating, often having to be in meetings or having to put things into writing to clarify decisions and choices that have to be made. Product managers, if they're more tactical, if they're more closer to the product owner model, might be heavily involved in backlog grooming and sprint planning and tracking sprints as they head towards certain goals of solving problems or shipping features. They do a lot of coordination, a lot of orchestration. They spend a lot of time trying to stay up to date on all the information across the spectrum, internally and externally, that might impact the product that they're working on. They help people get unstuck. But as I said, it's primarily a communication and coordination job. So it's quite different from what a UX designer, just to make that point, and something I try to make clear in my book, is that a UX strategist thinks about the shape of the product and the, you know, why a user might move through it and, you know, some high-level conceptual things that product managers also think about. So there's some quite, you know, there are overlapping common areas of training and interest and attention in those two jobs. But UX designers spend often a lot of time making diagrams and or working through UX practices like card sorts or synthesizing research or taxonomy development, things like that. And product managers don't tend to spend time doing design work, and they spend some time synthesizing research, but they spend a lot more time working with words and numbers than with sort of pictures and screens.
So as a tiny startup grows, and typically in the early days, it is the founder who is the product manager. When is the time when this role decouples from the founder into a separate position? And how many product managers can there be? Can there be more than one in one product? How does the hierarchy work?
Well, those are two questions. I'll try to take them one at a time. And in each case, I am going to have to put a little frame around the answer and say there really is no one right answer for these things. You can see my old UX training coming in here, right? It depends. But and only to say that the context matters, you know, that I can talk about the general patterns and some of the things I see since, for instance, in my consulting when people bring me in or what they struggle with. But I want to be careful not to overgeneralize because a lot of these things are to be applied to the specific situation and to the specific people involved. And there is no kind of sort of out of the book recipe that is exactly you. I'll make an analogy. If you've ever been asked or had people discuss, what is the right ratio of designers to engineers? What is the right ratio of product managers to designers or to, and you know, a lot of people have opinions and they know what, a lot of people have figured out what works for their teams, but I've never seen some number that's everybody agrees. It's 3-1, it's 1-6. Like there doesn't seem to be a universal answer to that question. There probably could not be. So to go back to your questions, I 100% agree that you do not typically have a product manager as an employee in a very early stage startup, because for the reason that you said, that at least one of the founders, if there's more than one, or the founder, needs to have a very clear product vision and needs to be actually like even tactically driving what to build and what to work on. So functionally, that founder is a product manager, is the only product manager the company needs or should have when it starts. And then you say, well, when is the time to bring somebody in? So that's sort of the next question. And the time to do that is when the founder, who's often the CEO, because if there's two founders, the other founder is probably an engineer and they're probably more like the CTO and maybe also doing all the operational work and things like that. So this CEO founder who's working full time as a product manager trying to launch a product and get it off the ground probably has to be in that role through that initial launch. They probably can't bring in a product manager to ship their product. However, there's going to be a period when basically the founder is being pulled in too many directions. And the work of doing product management is detaining them from higher value or higher leverage work that the company needs them to do, that the company needs a founder or a CEO to do. So for instance, CEOs have to deal with investors. CEOs have to deal with sometimes analysts and the press. They have to manage the board if they have a board. They have to be working on a vision that they can communicate both internally and externally. They have all this work to do that informs what the product is doing and in fact sometimes reports on what's going on with the product, but is work outside of the work of product management. So when they start to find that they're not doing the sales work they might need to do or the partner building work or the relationship management work because they're in too many meetings or they're looking at too many, you know, UX diagrams or they're having too many arguments with an engineer or something like that, that's the time where they need help on product management. And to get that, what I call that leverage, to free up some of their time so that they can project upward and outward and less sort of into the internal workings of the company so much. Doesn't mean that they tune out and stop caring about the product or move away from it. They're probably going to manage that product manager and they're probably going to still be quite interested in how things are going. It's also a very difficult hire always. It often doesn't work out the first time that you try to bring in a product person. They could be at the wrong level, or there's lack of agreement between the CEO and the product manager about what to do, or they don't take enough initiative. I often, when I'm consulting and helping a company figure out how to bring in that first product person, when there's particularly an early stage startup, the analogy that comes to mind most often is a young couple with their first child and the first time they want to have a babysitter so they can go out and have a date finally again. You know, it's the baby. You're going to let a stranger, you know, do what you've been doing, washing it or feeding it, putting them to bed. That's so scary. What if they drop them? What if they get it wrong? What if they don't call the emergency line correctly when something happens? There's so much fear about somebody else breaking this special thing you've been making. So it's normal to be worried about that, you know, and it's hard, therefore, to let go and to trust somebody. It's very important you find somebody who you think has the vision, who really has both the craft skills to do product management, but also fully understands what the CEO has been doing up to that point. But it's difficult. You have to build trust, and it can be fraught as a relationship. There's also the question of how senior that person should be. Do you need more of a a sort of individual contributor product manager who can run around and just do a lot of that tactical work that the CEO has no time for anymore. It's probably what you want. Sometimes you bring in a senior person to start leading product management and building a product management team and practice because, say, maybe you're growing as a company overall or your traffic is growing. And that can also be hard because that person might make the CEO feel challenged or threatened because it's another executive now with strong opinions and some authority over that area. The relationship between a head of product and a CEO is often another difficult relationship that has some built-in friction where you have to fight. You're supposed to have tension over things and to be challenging each other. And yet CEOs don't always love that part of it. Your other question was, I think, was it how many or how to staff a product team? That's one where I have to hide even further behind the context.
It depends.
Yeah, I mean, really the context, because what I'd say is one of my product gurus or one of the people who I look to as a mentor and teacher is named Ellen Chisa. And she's at a CHISA is her last name. I think she's an entrepreneur in residence right now at a VC on the East Coast of the US. But she's founded companies and she's been a product manager and she has also an engineering background. She's whip smart. She writes brilliantly. I love every time I read things she's written, I have that combination of saying, that's so true. It really maps to what I've said, but it's also better than I'm still learning things. You know, it's like, I believe her, she's correct. Anyway, not to sing her praises too much, but she has a newsletter now. And I was reading her way just the other day. And one of the things that she pointed out was that you don't want to hire ahead of the workload with product managers. You know, that if you hire a product manager because you think you're going to need work for them, they're going to just make up work. They're going to do some stuff. It's going to not be useful and they'll sort of lose their credibility. So in a sense, you hire product managers behind the workload because it's the kind of work that's interstitial and connecting and enabling. So people can cover it for a while until it becomes a strain. Now, that doesn't mean you want to be so far behind that, you know, the hiring cycle means you're constantly overworking everybody. But you definitely you don't want to staff up on a bunch of product managers because you're expecting to have some work for them in 3 months or something like that. I would tend to grow a practice slowly if possible. I do like having a first hire who can start to establish some of the record keeping and tracking that might not have existed yet. And some of the, you know, creating some of the nice helpful documents and helping to build the relationships. And then over time, formalize that into a product management practice and start to hire people into a hierarchy. But I don't like to grow the team too fast usually.
One of the angles for your book is how UX people can grow into product managers and use their UX skills to their advantage to become good PMs. Elaborate on that, please.
I like to think of it this way. UX consists of a wide spectrum of skills or proficiencies, and we can argue all day over what they're called and what is something part of something else. There's no one form of that, but most teams can say, well, we need somebody who can prototype, and we need somebody who can do user research, and we need somebody who's good at sketching, and we need people who can run a workshop, and we need people who are good at information architecture, and we need some good interaction designers. Or not, but you know, you can have your list. Whatever team you have with some level of awareness can make a list of the UX proficiencies that go into your practice. And one reason why I like to do this, it's something I do in the book and I've done it in workshops too, is I call it making your own UX histogram, sort of then ranking yourself in each of those areas, or low, medium, high skill or something like that. And also as a team leader, ranking everybody on the team in that way and seeing where is nobody good or where you have too many people who do the same subset of skills. But one reason why I like to pull it out like that into a wide spectrum or a histogram rather than to sort of oversimplify these jobs is that I found in the past that hiring was hard if the boss was saying, we need one UX and one UI or some sort of shorthand like that, where they kind of meant someone who will do diagrams and someone who will push pixels, you know, someone who will figure out the flow and somebody who will make sure that the motion easing is good on you know, when you drag or something like that. So a crafts person, but also a kind of a concept person. I think it's more complicated than that, right? And these skills can, people can have a mishmash of these different skills across the spectrum, but you can loosely spread them to some of them are more high level, strategic, conceptual, big picture and structuring. And others are more tactical, more craft oriented, more specific, you know, like on the pixel level, on the detail level, what the exact copy is, not just the content strategy, things like that. And what you find is that the product work kind of sits further on that strategic side. You know, it's next to the strategic UX work, next to the IA, next to the systems diagram and things like that. Not so close to the visual, you know, graphic design skills and things like that. That's less relevant to being a product manager. Well, it's not bad to have those skills. It just doesn't help very much. So what you find is that those, if you are good at information architecture, if you're good at synthesizing research, if you're good at contextual inquiry, if you're good at mapping user journeys, really deeply understanding the needs of users and crafting experiences that would work better for them, those are all insights, powers, proficiencies that are very, very helpful as a product manager. Whether you are a product manager or whether you want to help your product manager, those are all things they need. Now, they don't always think about it the same way. They sometimes overlook that you have that to offer. You sometimes have to figure out a way to put it in terms that the product manager appreciates, but it is something that you can offer, that you can bring to the table and say, I can help. Let me make a diagram. Let's look at this research together, both the interviews you did in coffee shops and the user research that we did and the survey we sent out, and also this data. Let's do that sort of synthetic work of sketching out ideas and trying to, you know, synthesize and come up with insights together. So there's a whole bunch of UX skills that map really, really well onto PM work, onto a part of the PM work, although they don't extend as far sometimes into the technical issues or especially the business issues.
Product managers have a great deal of business skills. So what type of business skills do they need to have and how can they learn them?
Yeah, product managers are expected to bring that business sensibility, and that's for good or ill. Like, I think that's one of the reasons why some UX people are suspicious of product managers or uncomfortable with them, is that they see them maybe as there's some expressions that are probably a little dated now, but they used to call somebody a suit. He's a suit, you know, meaning the one of the business people, or a bean counter, meaning that, you know, they just care about the money and, you know, they don't really care about the vision or something like that. So there's a, you know, sometimes it's perceived as a negative among UX people that business is a concern of product management. But, you know, particularly if you're working in a business, then the business side matters, right? Because it's sort of like it keeps the lights on and it's where your salary comes from. So product managers are primarily responsible for, you know, most directly, the business aspects of bringing a product to a market, pricing it correctly, or having a strategy for growing its adoption, understanding competition, you know, which is something UX people look at competition often, at least to steal the best ideas, if nothing else, and building a roadmap that suggests that we're going to tackle this problem next and then that, or if we succeed at this, then we want to go to this level next. So having a vision for the future direction of the product. There's a need to focus in on core business metrics, which might, depending on the nature of how you either make money or establish market dominance, typically have to do with growing some numbers, growing users, growing their retention, growing sales, growing subscriptions. There's usually some numbers that you're focused on figuring out how to make them go up. And as I said, there's almost always a need to think about the money, whether that's literally the transactions of how do we sell more, how do we get more money paid for this product, but also things like, well, what does it cost us? You know, if we hire another engineer, that's expensive. But without the current staff, we can't build the React Native version of the app that we wanted to build. So there's this question of looking at how do you pay for things? How do you justify a cost or an opportunity cost against another cost? Those are the kind of business skills that are typically needed by a product manager. And there's a number of different backgrounds that have led people to become product managers. And there's been almost like fashion trends in technology, at least in the Silicon Valley world that I'm close to geographically. And I'd say originally, most product managers were business people primarily. They had often MBA degrees, business school degrees, and that was their entree into technology, was that they represented the business. They were bringing the profit and loss statement, the revenue projections, and things like that. I think they extended their reach into UX and engineering in some ways over time as the product management role matured. And there's been a de-emphasis where it's not necessarily considered to be important to get an MBA or to go to business school. But you absolutely do have to have some comfort with thinking in terms of markets and potentially sales and certainly costs and even sometimes operational business issues. So the sort of team coordination and management work can leak into almost like a executive administration, those aspects of being a business leader, like general management type roles. Oh, and you also asked how to develop these skills or where do you get them? I didn't want to overlook that. Sorry. That's a really interesting question. I mean, I think I was fortunate enough to learn on the job, to have people who took a chance on me because of the parts of the job that I could do and who felt I had the aptitude to learn the rest. And they literally taught me. So, for instance, I had a mentor, Jay Zaveri, when I worked at a startup called CloudOn. And he taught me a lot about engagement metrics, retention metrics, growth metrics, and virality metrics. So sort of, you know, there's a coefficient of virality. Actually, I hate this metaphor now because of a pandemic. It's because it's the same math, you know, the idea that if the R0 is greater than one, then you're basically infecting new customers, you know, at an adequate rate to grow the business. And you actually map, you often have a model that says, well, if we get 1,000 new users and, you know, on the first day and we retain after a month, you know, 100 of them. And if 10 of them are so enthusiastic that they recommend, then they'll each generate 3 new users. And so you actually come up with an equation that you try to optimize to get a feedback loop going where your growth is self-sustaining rather than depending on you constantly advertising or buying, you know, doing SEO tricks and things like that. So anyway, there were a lot of things like that where I had the opportunity to be taught on the job. You certainly can take classes. You know, you can go to school or night school, or you can take sort of online courseware to fill in the gaps if you have to learn to get a little bit better at, you know, understanding statistics, for instance, or at understanding some basic business, you know, kind of economic issues and things like that. But it is a gap for a lot of UX people, and it's the main one you have to fill if you actually want to pursue product management as a career.
There are some things why a product manager might not be happy at times, because it's a position when you have to show numbers, but you have little control of many things. What are those things that make them miserable at times?
It can definitely be a frustrating job, and I think sometimes I've noticed some product managers with almost like a martyrdom complex, like almost like they enjoy the victimhood of it all or something that self-sacrificing side, which is very different from that kind of idea of the PM as the boss who just says no to you and doesn't listen and doesn't care. It's more of the service model of a PM who cares too much about everything. And one thing I'll say is that I think one quality that makes a good product manager is to be nosy, to be curious, to want to know all the things. If you've ever been in a job where some people go into a room and have a meeting and you say, I wish I was in that meeting, or I wonder what they're talking about, or, you know, when the bosses are talking and you want to kind of be one of the bosses, partly because you just want to know what the plan is, that's the temperament that's perfect for product management, because you kind of do get to know all the things. But the burden of that is that now you're the one who knows all the things. You lie awake at night going, I think I left the door unlocked. I think maybe we didn't translate all of the copy correctly. I think there was a bug I meant to ask them to fix and I forgot to ask. And you get up at 3 a.m. and you send a Slack message to somebody or to yourself so you don't wake anybody up so that you'll do it the next day. So there's this tendency, like you said, that you're supposed to coordinate and lead people and deliver results. But those people don't report to you. You don't do their annual review or hire or fire them. You can't tell people what to do often, although they think you can, but most of the time you're really just trying to persuade them and convince them. So you have you are expected to get results. You are held responsible if things don't work. And in fact, the ethos of a great product manager is to take the responsibility anyway. You give all credit to the team. You take all blame for what goes wrong. You worry about a lot of things. There's never enough time because part of the job is inherently sifting through the natural overabundance of great ideas that you could never do all such ideas. So you're that main person who has to say no to all the great ideas that are, you know, beyond the ones that are affordable to do or worth doing now. And so you're like the person who turns off the music at the party, who, you know, tells people they can't be in the play. You're the bad person sometimes. You look like the heavy, but really you're just trying to bring everybody to a consensus. You can't really make anybody do anything. You know, you're working with your credibility. People have to trust you. They believe you know you're paying attention to all the issues, but you still have to persuade them. and continue to have, you know, to have people have faith in you by listening well, by delivering results. But yeah, it can be a lonely job. It can be a job that is very frustrating. I think maybe when we were talking before off the air, you mentioned a friend who I believe was maybe the only product manager in a startup. That could be a job with a lot of overwork. Or, you know, I may have gotten the not the only one.
Probably
yeah.
Not the only one. It's just the stress of being responsible for everything, but not having that much influence that I can just sense. And that sounds a lot like a founder job, but the founder comes with authority at least.
That's
and
true.
Product manager is a bit deprived of that.
Yeah, and it does seem to vary from company to company. So there are some tyrannical product managers out there for sure, or some who act like they're the boss, even if they don't have real authority. There's different styles as well. I think I have a tendency to try to be a supportive leader who gives who tries to find out what people need to be successful. And I try to look for the ways that people can work together and teach each other. But I'm not a disciplinarian. And there's times when probably I've been on projects where a person with a little bit of a tougher because I said so kind of attitude may have gotten, you know, a better result than I did. So I think that there's room for a lot of different approaches to this and styles of product management. But I think, yes, most commonly, there's this dilemma where you are responsible, but not in charge.
As we're wrapping up the episode, a few more words on how product managers and UXers should not clash. How can they better work together and make decisions together instead of trying to push aside one another?
No, I'm glad you asked that because, and I'll admit that some of this is aspirational. I mean, I do try to be honest in my book about the difference between ideal product management as I believe it ought to be practiced at a high level and the fact that in reality, that may not be what you're seeing on your own company or your own team. And your product manager may not, you may say, well, Christian, he isn't, or she is not doing those things. They're just doing other things instead. So I do try to keep both in the picture, both what I think we should be trying to do and some sense of, but we're not there yet. And so therefore, how do we get there? You know, rather than just looking at the aspiration. My aspiration is that product management and UX are adjacent disciplines. They do have a large area of shared concern. And they also have other things that they specialize in that are different. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think in order to work well together, you cannot skip over having some difficult conversations about the overlapping area. There needs to be some clarification at times. The frustrations, for instance, are often about unspoken assumptions. I think I do the wireframes, but you think you do the wireframes. Or you know, I brought user research, but you said you already talked to some users and you don't need my user research. So when there are those frustrations about disagreement, whether stated or unstated, over who does what, who's responsible for what, how important are different parts of the work or how necessary, it's actually needed to sit down and talk it through. And that can be between individuals on a team, and sometimes it can be in a company among all the individuals as a practice. And I literally recommend this, and I've guided some people through these conversations before, where you might go to a whiteboard and both write up or put up stickies or use your markers, but put all of the different tasks and skills and proficiencies that need to be done between the two roles. And then do a sort and figure out what are the non-controversial ones. You know, the product manager does not at all do something. You know, they do, there's some of the stickies they won't want to grab. There's others they will. And what you'll find is that there's some things in the middle where there's disagreement. I say I do this, but you say you do this too. Well, that's a really good first step because you've now at least figured out the boundaries of the area of disagreement or the gray area. And this is an area of not just of problems and sharp elbows, but of potentially collaboration and creative tension. You know, it's good sometimes to pull from slightly different perspectives. You sometimes find a third thing that neither of you saw at first. So if you can articulate, first of all, what is that problematic area or the area where we do not quite agree? That's step one. Then you work through those items and you try to negotiate. You explain to each other, why don't you agree? You say it's this, but I don't see it that way. I think it's really more like that. And it doesn't mean that you're, and this is where I'm saying, I don't want to make these things seem like they're idealized and they go smoothly. These are difficult conversations and they sometimes end badly or have to start over. But if you do this work, you bring to the surface what those disagreements are rather than having them be hidden and kind of tripping you up all the time because nobody has ever stated these things. And frankly, at some point, you often have to just agree to disagree and agree to a temporary alignment that is good enough for now. And if that other person has more power than you, they may win more of those arguments over what the gray area things are. But you can sort of snapshot it and say, okay, for this project, we've agreed. You will do the wireframes. I think I should do them, but you will do them, you know. But let's just make note of it. And then you come back next time and go, how well did that work? And, you know, maybe let's try it my way next time. Other times, like I said, you have to escalate to your bosses and say, you know, I cannot resolve this issue. So there's a lot of tactical ways to actually unpick the potential problems. But the goal is to get to that point, like I said, where you've worked out, you've sorted out that part. You've figured out, I'm good at this, you're good at that, we're both good at this, we'll do that stuff together. And at some point, you can work as allies. And now when your disciplines are sitting around the table of leadership of the company, the product focused team and the UX focused people are working together and both focused on the things they really care about, which is creating a valuable experience that really solves real people's actual problems that they value enough to keep coming back and using again and again. Everybody wants that. They may disagree about how you get there, whether you need more research or less or whatever, but everybody wants to get to that. And if you have two people really thinking in terms of the user and the experience and the overall pattern of behaviors that lead to something that can survive and kind of make its way in the world, I think that's a very powerful alignment and worth working for.
That's a wonderful way to finish off today's episode. Thanks so much for sharing your wisdom today with us. Where can people find your book and more of what you do online?
Well, you can find the book anywhere you buy books. So you can certainly look up Product Management for UX People or my silly last name, Crumlish, and probably find it that way. You can also order it directly from the rosenfeldmedia.com website if you want to go there. And in fact, if you do order it from the Rosenfeld site, I believe we have a discount for your listeners, which, if I have it correctly, is UI Breakfast 022. And that produces, I
zero believe... 0222. It's actually
that's right.
UI three twos breakfast. In the end.
Oh, 0222?
Yeah, we're going to put it in the show notes for
oh,
sure.
Yeah,
no worries.
Yeah, don't count on me getting it right. As you know, I think we got it to be shorter than they suggested originally. So
yes,
that was the
yes.
best I could do. But that will get a discount for your loyal listeners.
Amazing. Are you on social media at all?
I am. I'm Media Junkie on Twitter. But if you follow me there, you're going to sometimes see things totally unrelated to product or UX. Just a fair warning. And of course, I'm on LinkedIn. And I think those are probably the most relevant places. I publish on Medium sometimes as well, occasionally.
Awesome. Thanks so much for giving us a sneak peek into this fascinating profession. Well, actually, don't wrap up just yet. I have one more question. When you come in as a hired product consultant, how is it different from an in-house role? And how can you come in, do something as a gig, and then leave versus, you know, real product owner who stays?
Well, it's a very different role entirely. And in fact, it's one thing is it's less threatening, say, to that CEO because you're not going to stick around. And so they don't have to make a full, you know, they don't have to say, I trust this person enough to have them forever. But also sometimes I'll come in and actually do some of the strategic work or help them get their roadmap together. The consulting is much more around leadership and even an operational setup. It's more about how to set up the team, how to maybe empower the team to be more focused on outcomes and less just a feature factory kind of a team, you know, how and when to make that hire. So I might be bridging a gap a little bit and doing the work, some of the work the hire will do to show what it's supposed to be like, but I'm usually not coming in as a seat filler for the role. Or even like there's another mentor of mine, Rich Mironov, who's a great product management consultant. He does what he calls smoke jumping, which means like jumping in and being temporarily the VP of product for a company, but also helping to find and hire that replacement. So that's an approach I don't do as often where I'm filling in the bridging role. I might be helping with the hiring, but I tend to consult and advise. Now, then again, the work I'm doing with California is just full on direct product management and a little bit of that strategic work of helping to figure out how the team should be built. So I'm flexible.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing.
Sure.
Well, Thanks again, and have a wonderful rest of your week, Christian. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. Your questions were great.